Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain masseur.
The battle for America is on.
9/11 has never been a more important remembrance. It marks a pivot point in the arc of American history, particularly with regard to its dealings with Islam. Iran update and prediction. The meme wars continue. Are Canadians too uptight? Well, no. But elitists are, whether American or Canadian or wherever else in Europe. Canuck snobs are as repulsive as snobby Yanks. It's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
9/11 has never been a more important remembrance. It marks a pivot point in the arc of American history, particularly with regard to its dealings with Islam. In the beginning of our young nation, 250 years ago, the Barbary pirates, Muslims all, harassed our commercial shipping enterprises that required then-President Washington, weary of war, and leading a nation not fitted for extending its military might through any kind of navy, to opt for a way of dealing with this that was not optimum. He signed the Naval Act in 1794, commissioning the USS Constitution and the USS Constellation to be built, beginning the United States Navy. Meanwhile, negotiating with the terrorists back in the day involved paying their tribute, blackmail, to keep our commercial shipping industry safe from these blackguards. John Adams continued that policy, initiated treaty arrangements that involved paying the Barbary pirates for peace and protection. And it was a protection racket. He succeeded to conclude a treaty with Tripoli and was pursuing an arrangement with Tunis. Adams also strengthened and expanded our naval fleet to 50 vessels and tested the newfound country's naval prowess against France in what was called the Quasi-War, 1798-1800. And that was with France, by the way. The Navy's historical records record that this action prepared the Navy for engagement of the Barbary pirates. They saw the connection. Back then, Jefferson wanted to take it to the Muslims long before. In fact, it was a disagreement between him and Adams. When Adams and Jefferson served as diplomats in Europe, Jefferson encouraged war be waged against the Barbary pirates, while Adams advised caution and patience since, at that time, the United States did not have a proper Navy or the financial resources to support one, or another war for that matter, and Washington agreed with Adams on that matter. By the time Jefferson occupied the office of Commander-in-Chief, the Navy was fit and tested for military engagement, and the Muslim menace had gotten excessively greedy and aggressive. In fact, a Muslim named Yusuf Garamanli, or something like that, the ruler of Tripoli, started demanding substantially more money, from $18,000 annually to a $225,000 payment, followed by a $20,000 annual from them forward. The Muslim pirate of Tripoli threatened he would declare war if Jefferson did not comply. Well, Jefferson did not comply, and this fellow declared war and began attacking American commercial ships. The Muslim Mufti sent his soldiers to the embassy, I mean the American consulate in Tripoli, and, quote, chopped down the flagstaff, end quote, openly declaring war on America. Does any of this sound familiar? Jefferson sent our Navy into the Mediterranean to defend American commerce ships. The Muslim pirates attacked an American schooner, the USS Enterprise, interesting, who returned the fight and defeated the Muslim pirate ship. The captain of the USS Enterprise disarmed and disabled the attacking ship and then released it. It required about 4 years of fighting to decisively defeat the Barbary pirates. Finally, Jefferson ordered the USS John Adams to bombard the capital city of Tripoli from the halls of, and so on. Later, he authorized a land invasion and took the capital. The Muslim pirates begged for peace and wanted to negotiate. And Jefferson settled with these shrewd negotiators and ended up paying them $60,000 for the release of about 300 prisoners, but did not agree to any further payments to the pirates for their protection or permission to transit the Mediterranean waters. We withdrew from Derna, which was the capital of Tripoli at that time, and left Barbary pirates to fight it out among themselves from there. You can read the treaty here, linked in my notes. And I think I saw one person lift their head and say, oh, that sounds interesting. I need to leave this topic, but the epilogue is that trouble from Muslim pirates did not end there. This went on until Madison came along and finally ended it in 1815, not long after we concluded the second war with Britain, the infamous War of 1812. Islam had already divided into Shia and Sunni for 11 centuries before this. And by the way, the Shia Muslims conquered Iran in 1501, later reverted back to Persian rule. And then the Barbary pirates were predominantly Sunni, Osama bin Laden type Sunni. Oh, and the Muslim pirates explained to President Washington's diplomats representing America to these Muslim pirates that the basis for Islamic actions against America ships was justified by Islamic law and their Quran on the basis that, quote, nations that had not acknowledged Muslim authority were considered enemies, end quote. And he went on to explain that therefore warfare and enslavement were lawful. And this is recorded in Adams' report to John Jay, then serving as Secretary of State. September 11, 2001, 225 years after our first official war with Islamist pirates, marked a pivot point in our conflict with Muslim terrorism and America's waffling, wobbling relationship with God, the God of our founding. The 9/11 attack chose these targets. First, the World Trade Center, an attack on the God of Mammon. And then the Pentagon, an attack on the God of Forces. And then an attempted attack on our Capitol, or the White House, we don't know which, representing our one nation under God, which was thwarted, interestingly, by Christians who took a stand on the principle, give me liberty, give me death type thing. And America started singing God Bless America, and churches filled with Americans turning to God and their concern for the country. Now, since then, Muslim pirates have slowly worked their way into our country through policies implemented by our first Muslim president, I'm talking about Obama, and we can argue about that another time, that led to a Muslim communist becoming mayor of ground zero of the Muslim pirates' attack on 9/11. So this September 11 remembrance in New York will be blighted by the spectacle of a Muslim mayor, perhaps, although he's been disinvited, presiding over the ceremonies. But the bane is now much more serious. Before 2001, there were virtually no Muslim officials holding office in the United States from the offices of, say, mayor through state legislature, federal, and so on. Only three, a mayor in Texas, a member of the General Assembly in North Carolina, and a New Hampshire state legislature. No adherent to Islam served in the U.S. Congress before 9/11-2001. The Muslim Christian imposter Barack Hussein Obama was elected to the U.S. Senate in 2005. His Muslim buddy, Keith Ellison, was elected into Congress in 2006. Islamic adherence representation in U.S. government gradually increased until, in 2022, under Biden, it exploded. 189 Muslims were elected at all levels of state and federal government in 2022. And by 2023, that increased to 235. Today, the number has been updated to 255. Every Islamic politician presently holding office in the United States was put in place after 9/11. And we are beginning to be confronted with candidates who associate themselves with many who advocate for violence, and others like Hassan Piker, who promote anti-Semitic sentiment and say America deserved 9/11. In June this year, Piker endorsed Abdul Muhammad El-Sayed, and that's the Muslim candidate to represent Michigan as one of their senators. By the way, Sayed has not disavowed Piker's endorsement. In fact, when asked if there were any views expressed by Piker that Sayed disagreed with, he said, quote, "I'm not here to disavow people's views," end quote. As chameleons always do, Saeed is blending into the political landscape and distancing himself from the likes of Piker. So we must pray God will open the eyes of the Michiganders to see the truth, and pray for Mike Rogers and help him if you can. He has already misstepped, in my opinion, asking AIPAC, American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, not to campaign on his behalf. Now, friend, if you have to hide what you believe to get elected, well, the fact is, if this guy's election depends on Muslim vote in Michigan, and he thinks he's going to get any of that vote, you understand? And if he thinks he's going to get any of the anti-Israel liberals or the Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens crazy crowd, come on. If he wants the demon-possessed vote, well, he's not going to get it. I would never advise anyone to seek and use subterfuge to trick people into voting for you into office. I'd go straight at it and make it part of my campaign. But anyway, in Texas, we have a professing Christian running against an evangelical Christian, Paxton. Tallarico has said he has learned as much about spirituality from mystical Islam as he has from Christianity or from Christian writers. He says God is non-binary and tortures the Holy Bible into service to his heresy. I addressed this thoroughly in my pulpit this past Sunday, and you can find the message online. I've also talked extensively about this on my Brain Massage Live podcast. I know you've heard enough about the Learing Center. Isn't it great, by the way, when a single image carries the entire message? The amount of fraud perpetrated in this country by the Somali Muslims in Minnesota and Middle East Muslims in Michigan, and what is being uncovered in California, added to all else I brought forward. And one thing is obvious, one thing is clear, we are under attack, and it started openly on 9/11. And it hasn't stopped. America depends on the remnant of Christ's kingdom to wake up and pull down the strongholds of darkness that have served as the FOB, forward operating bases in the spiritual realm, the staging areas from which the soldiers of darkness are launched and continue to be launched to attack America as founded. Christ's FOBs are his churches. And if you keep supporting churches that refuse to enter this war aggressively and will not obey Ephesians and resist the devil and his forces and not assist them, if we refuse to be filled with the Spirit and with the sword of the Spirit, quote, reprove the world of sin, righteousness, and judgment, end quote, I mean, the very commission of the Holy Spirit who was sent into the world, well then, friend, you're part of the problem. I get this nonsense all the time. I'm like, yeah, well, you're not going to build a church like that. All I can say is I don't care about that. Obviously, I'm not interested in recruiting or attracting salesmen or the modern mamby-pamby, say-nothing, do-nothing Christians. I want soldiers. Let me give you a quick Iran update and we'll move on. This is becoming a much larger war than many have thought. It's amazing how Trump is able to see the exact critical issues. It's a testament to the power of prayer, by the way. He has made statements lately declaring he is done reaching out to the mullahs and he's going to crash them with the mullah. He's got a mullah bomb the mullahs, and it's working. In the book of Judges, the free people of Israel, thriving under the divine order of patriarchal leadership, with the leadership diffused throughout the tribes and organized around the family unit. You know that system of governance ordained by God that goes like this. God the head of Christ, Christ the head of man, and man the head of woman, 1 Corinthians 11, 1-4. And as you might expect, repudiate the divinely appointed order, and you get, well, just look around you. You get leering centers and baby murderesses, and the paralysis of judgment leading to the total collapse of justice throws us into the arms of dictatorship that will oppress. Look, Judges is a testimony of the cycle. A people under God living free and prosperous, becoming lax and aloof toward God and turning their back on his ways and adopting the ways of the heathen, are then let go under oppression because that's what they've chosen. That's what happens to a nation that forgets God. It is turned into hell, Psalm 9:17. Well, that nation comes under the oppression of foreign rulers and foreign laws, and it gets so bad, God's people remember him and long for the old days and cry out in repentance and faith, and then God mercifully hears them and raises a remarkable leader who is distinguished before all other world leaders by God showing his divine favor upon his leadership. And by this, he delivers the people from their oppressors. Gideon is a perfect example. He was flawed. Remember the ephod. He was hesitant at first. He was extraordinarily bold, however, and he obeyed the biblical principle of acknowledging God and trusting in His word and never balking at the odds. Qualities our own intrepid leaders display every day. Okay, I need to take a short break. Hold on. I'm coming.
Come to the Lighthouse, Sunday morning at 10:45 for another exciting message from the Bible and the four declarations of God in the Declaration of Independence. This Sunday, Pastor Jerry presents the fourth declaration, the protection of divine providence. Discover what our founders said about the hand of providence. 1310 West Betteravia Road in Santa Maria. Look for the Lighthouse.
Devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, signaling the enemies on the march. Anybody that would steal from us our liberties. The meme wars continue. Let them roll. Are Canadians too uptight? Well, no, but elitists are. And the fact is, Canucks snobs are as repulsive as snobby Yanks. If I did not know so many fine, godly, upstanding Canadians of good character and principled, well, I'd be tempted to think it's a nation of Welshers and Supra Grifters. My friendships there check my reaction to, well, Canada has taken advantage of us and the trade relationship. I'm forced to admit we've got some Looney Tunes here who support policies that Welsh on the promise of our government to protect freedom of speech, assembly, conscience, and self-protection and privacy from undue invasion by the government into our personal lives. And, well, that's not America, though, see? Does it comport with what America's about in its founding? They are not America because they have repudiated America as founded and desire to transform us, United States, into a nation our founders would not recognize. It is the Canadian government and the people who support that government, not the Canadian people, eh? So don't get your shorts in a knot over the naming of a lake that borders both our countries. Little something you ought to know, 330 miles of the shoreline of that lake borders the United States, and 305 miles borders Canada. So get out of my face about Lake America versus Lake Ontario. Standing on our shores and looking out across that lake, we see Lake America. Standing on your shores, looking out across the lake, you see Lake Ontario. We've never had a problem with Canada calling it Lake Ontario. So back off, bucko. Okay, I'm teasing you. I'm trying to see. Do you have a sense of humor? But there is significance to this event. It arose in the midst of negotiations with Canada about our trade arrangements, where Trump has looked at the numbers and sees, and I've looked at them too, and sees that Canada has been ripping us off for decades. And this goes back before NAFTA, by the way. And it's time for an adjustment, way overdue. Carnival Carney, think about it, doing his sideshow shuffle, tries to shift our attention away from his government supra-grift swindle of the United States to what he expects North Americans will find boorish behavior on the part of the MAGA Yanks. Now, I say Canada has been ripping us off. That is, if you think dumb people are solely to blame when they are taken advantage of by another. Like the dummies in America who voted self-serving traitors into power, who negotiated on behalf of the interests of globalists who sold out America's national interests in service to globalist intrigues, you know. Mantras like free markets must accept the free movement of labor, right, which pushed for and implemented the border policies that nearly destroyed our national identity and bankrupted our country, our culture, and our liberties. Anyway, naive Americans assuming their leaders would protect America's interests, well, wouldn't you expect that, were not aware of what their leaders were doing, and so were betrayed by their leaders and taken advantage of by our neighbors. So, Trump comes along and says, nope, we're not going to be doing that anymore. So, hey, Carney et al., check your own moral compass on this. When some huckster takes advantage of an elderly couple, let's say, and sells them what he knows they don't need, and tricks them into signing a contract he knows they don't want, is that a swindle? And a cheat? If your moral compass reads true, then you know that what Canada's government did in its agreements with us was a swindle and a cheat, aided and abetted by our own Benedict leaders. As for what our own duly elected officials did, well, they betrayed the American people and sold us out. The biblical principle is, look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Philippians 2:4, that's a good old Christian principle. What do you think of it? You know, I think it's a pretty good way to do business, don't you? You know, think honestly and fairly about both sides of any agreement that you're seeking to establish. Now, for the scoundrels here in America who took no thought for what's in the best interests of their own homeland, here's a biblical principle for you to consider. If any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith that is worse than an infidel. 1 Timothy 5:8. Infidel, interesting word. It means unbeliever, and it's found in the word infidelity. And you know what that means? Betrayal. Let's say treason. Any politician given power by the people who uses that power to promote their personal wealth or for other perhaps more nefarious reasons turns that power against the legitimate interests of the people he's elected to serve is committing political infidelity against the whole people. Not merely a subset of them, crimes against the people are those that are against the interests that are applicable to all the people generally, not specially some privileged group isolated and so on. What a bunch of nonsense. Laws that allow males to participate in female sports might seem to some to be in service to the pathetic males who are so worthless, they would take advantage of their elevated physical power over the female and rather than protect, instead prey upon them to service their own distorted appetite for dominance. But in fact, it is no service at all to anyone to encourage delusions. And it's especially vile when it allows injustice to be perpetrated against the innocent. And to let it go unchecked to protect the vile in their predation upon the innocent is abhorrent to all men of conscience. Only those whose conscience is seared can become so fixated on the pitiable plight of a fool to ignore the suffering inflicted by that fool upon the innocent. What sort of morality sacrifices the careers of these young and honest women working hard to excel in their sport on the altar of society's temporary insanity, accommodating the deranged and self-deluded who are taking advantage of stupid people who support this nonsense, allowing them to abuse their biologically weaker opponents? Well, in a manner of speaking, that's what Canadian government did to us. They took advantage of unfair trade deals hidden from the American people, too naive to ask questions, who trusted in their own government, but was being betrayed by infidels. No, by people worse than infidels. Worse! Consider, the phrase worse than translates a Greek word in the verse we looked at earlier, and it means aggravated evil, as in an aggravated assault. It's an offense that calls for punishment for correction that goes beyond the usual penalty for an offense. God says, these people are worse than infidels. Well, that should make all such offenders glad we are not Shia Muslims charged to sentence every infidel to death. Hey, to my Canadian so-called Liberal Party friends, under the globalists, Carney Barker with his ballyhoo calls to a one-world order, under the Christ haters, assaulting the bands and cords of the Lord and his anointed, Psalm 2. And by the way, most Canadian liberals or conservatives alike do not support males in female spaces, particularly in sports. So, hey, globalist government of Canada, Carney Barker, you can wipe off that smug, arrogant, self-righteous, cutesy mask thinly veiling the violent, envy-driven hatred you have for America. And your envy of Trump. Americans despise a pompous gas bag, and especially one that can't take a joke or a jibe. Come on, has this guy never hung around a locker room? Or did he ever hang out with blue-collar working Canadians in his whole life? Has he always been an elitist snob? Well, looky here. He played hockey for both Harvard and Oxford. I mean, even third-string goalie. Hockey is seriously a man's game. And he's never pretended to be some hockey star. He once said he held the gate open for some really good hockey players. I like that Carney better than this character. So, by the way, why don't we ever see a woman transition to a man in order to compete with men on men's hockey teams or men's boxing teams? You ever notice that? It never goes that way. Odd how the transgene works, isn't it? Don't you think? What about that smug and snide Carney face explaining how that works? What do you say, Carney, old boy? Eh? I hope you get it here. I'm playing around. I know I have listeners in Canada, and I love them. I hope we still have listeners in Canada. But let me ask you a question. Outside of the seriously vile memes that have made fun of Trump, mostly his distinctive hairstyle and the heads of Canadian ducks. Okay, I couldn't help myself. That's not a good example for the point I'm trying to make. Okay, but you get it. There's plenty of jibes and arrows flung at him beyond a meme calling for the execution of a political leader or something like that. Nobody here would become offended if some canut created a clever meme to tease Americans about Trump or even about our culture. You know what would happen? Nothing. Well, that's probably not true. You would probably see an avalanche of response in like memes, and we'd have a big meme war, and it would be a lot of fun. But we would never interrupt serious negotiations by telling Canadians to quit doing memes. Yeah, maybe he meant to tell Trump to quit doing memes. Which is about as ridiculous. You might think such behavior is below the dignity of the high and revered position of those cloistered in the ivory towers of their self-importance. But real Americans, and I think the rugby tough Canucks too, are not impressed by that sort of sophistry. You don't need me to tell you Trump is greatly esteemed here and taken very seriously by leaders all across Nimrod's plains. But in America, we don't do kings. We are a nation of kings. And we don't take ourselves so seriously that we can't take a joke or make one about ourselves and anyone else. You haven't been paying attention. We laugh at ourselves a lot, you know. We enjoy mimics and get a kick out of some of the idiosyncrasies of our most beloved personalities. And that's been true of us all along. I think Trump's down-to-earth, friend-of-the-common-man antics like serving in McDonald's or driving a trash truck approach to working America elevates and does not demean him. But let me warn you, when these stuck-up aristos try the same thing, it fails because it's obviously phony. But with Trump, it's a sincere recognition of the real value those jobs bring to the American people. Well, I gotta go. I lit the lamps to the church belfry arch. You let me know you see them. If you see that they are on, you can email me from our website, brainmassage.net. That's brainmassage.net. Find the contact us button and click, fill in the form there and click send. And when I finally get my hotline back up and running, I'll give you the number to reach me that way. I do miss your calls. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you soon.
Your next brain massage is scheduled for Saturday at 12 noon and Sunday at 7 a.m.